Ahoy, mateys! Welcome to the GameBuoy.org video game podcast, your twice monthly port of call for gaming news and views that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. I'm your host, Captain Spike, and with me, as always, is First Mate Slagkick.
Yarr!
Today is October 8th, 2017, and this is episode 146, Spooky Scenarios.
Ooh!
Thank you for that, resident pops ghostly in the room. Okay, I'm about to call the Ghostbusters. This is getting annoying.
No, I'm just really sad that the Wii U is a dead thing now.
Wii U.
All right. Welcome once again, our lovely and beautiful listeners, to another episode of the GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
This week, we're talking about our favorite spooky stages, stories, scenes, and sequences in games. You might note, of course, that this is a little bit low impact for our usual slate of Halloween episodes. But, you know, as I have spoken about previously, I am sort of dealing with some mental health issues at the moment. Good news on that front, you know, things have been getting better. I have been seeing my doctor regularly, and, you know, we're making progress and continue to anticipate making further progress in the coming weeks. However, this has made it kind of difficult for me to get in as much time doing research as I would like, and it's kind of been difficult for me to play any of, like, the real intense horror games that I usually revisit every year. You know, one of the problems with, like, having panic attacks and stuff is that playing horror games does not work super well with that.
I mean, I know how I reacted when you made me play PT, so, I mean, I can only imagine.
Oh, yeah, I would probably not do great at PT right now. So, you know, please just bear with us. We will, hopefully, later this month, have a little bit more traditional Halloween episode. But until then, let's get on with this episode. Slaggy, I believe we have our usual slate of follow-ups and news bits. Do you want to get us started on that?
Yes, we have a worldwide release announcement for 2018 for The Witch and the Hundred Night 2.
Yeah.
Is a PS4 title, of course, for both North America and Europe. There will be a standard and limited edition version available.
Because, of course, there will.
And this involves the Hundred Knight exploring a region called Kavala, where young women are contracting a sickness that makes them witches. That's a little spooky.
Yeah, actually, it is. You know, I'm actually really looking forward to this game. The first one was kind of an interesting little experiment, and the second one appears to take some of those ideas and further refine them. This game actually came out in Japan earlier this year, and I seem to recall it having its fan base, so fingers crossed that it turns out to be as good of a game as I'm hoping it could be.
Yeah, the Hundred Knight kind of is like a cute anime Shovel Knight, and the limited edition has a stress ball of his head.
Yes, but again, of course it does.
I mean, I guess it's better than a mouse pad of one of the witches, if you catch my drift.
We also have a pretty weird news story here. And this is word that Microsoft, and that's Microsoft, not IntiCreates, Spike Chunsoft, Comcept, or anyone, but Microsoft has released a patch for the Xbox One version of Mighty No. 9. This is kind of just really strange because, you know, it's pretty rare to see the platform holder of a console be the one to update individual game files to work better with their console. We don't yet have a change log explaining exactly what Team Xbox did, but apparently the games run more smoothly and with less input lag than they had before.
Huh.
So by all means, this does appear to be a positive thing. It's just very unusual.
Indeed. Well, for the two people, including one who is in the studio, we're playing Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite. We have news that Black Panther, Monster Hunter, and Sigma are coming to the game on October 17th.
In terms fantastic.
I believe this would be the first DLC.
So this will be the first DLC for the game. It'll be these three characters all added on one day. They're going to be $7.99 per character, but if you buy the 2017 character pass, you'll get these three characters, three other ones that will be launching before the end of the year, and the premium costumes for all of these characters for $29.99. So if you're interested in buying multiple of these characters, it pretty quickly makes more sense to just buy the character pass.
Wait, is Sigma wearing a Buzz Lightyear outfit?
No, that's what Sigma looks like.
Are you serious?
Yes, I'm serious.
Well, I mean, Marvel is owned by Disney now, so I made an assumption.
Sigma is a Capcom character, and Sigma has been been around for a lot longer than Toy Story.
Wait, so Buzz Lightyear's a ripoff of Sigma?
I would be more willing to go with that narrative, yes. Either way, you know, I will say Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite gets crapped on a lot. It deserves it in a lot of instances, but I'm actually kind of feeling like it's not a completely terrible game. It just lacks a lot of the polish that I think, which seems ironic, but it lacks a lot of the polish that we've come to expect from Capcom fighters of late.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the core gameplay actually kind of does seem to be there. The tournament scene right now is a mess, and we'll talk about that a little later, but I do think in, like, the low to mid game rather than like high game, like the low to mid game players, people who are not super elite pros but just play to have fun and play semi-seriously, I actually think that those people are getting a lot out of it.
Well, excellent.
We also have word here of a new character that is now available in the arcade version of Dissidia and presumably will be coming to the home version of Dissidia when it releases next January. This is Final Fantasy III's Cloud of Darkness. Slaggy, what do you think of this news?
I forgot that she was even a thing. Like, talk about a obscure Final Fantasy villain.
I mean, it's funny, though, because you're calling her obscure, but I'm like, she's in an entire game.
Yeah, the game that a lot of people forget about.
Well, a lot of people are super dumb.
Maybe a lot of people don't identify with Nameless Onion Knights.
Well, that's fine, because the first version that came to North America, they all had names and personalities, because it was on the DS.
The Hobbits all had unique names and personalities, but they were basically the same thing.
We also have word here that Unsung Story, should it ever release, will be releasing on the Nintendo Switch, PlayStation 4, and Xbox One, in addition to the originally kickstarted platform of PC.
Okay.
This is, of course, the supposedly upcoming tactics RPG envisioned by Yasumi Matsuno of the Ivalice series of Final Fantasy games fame. You know, I believe we spoke a few weeks ago about Little Orbit taking over development of this game from Playdeck, and basically they're, really working on making this more of like a Final Fantasy Tactics style experience that they intend on bringing to these platforms. While I remain fairly pessimistic about the game's long-term prospects, I will say they have captured my interest. What do you think about this one, Saigi?
Yeah, I mean, we'll just have to see what happens.
Fair enough.
We have an update for Super Mario Run.
Yeah.
There is a new game mode, a new world of courses, and most exciting, a new playable character. So I'll start out with these new courses. This is World Star. It adds 9 new courses after you've beaten the first 6 worlds of the game, which is in the World Tour mode. There is a Remix 10 mode, which puts you through 10 types of extra short courses, and you have to switch characters on the 5th course. And so if you complete Remix 10, you unlock a character that I'm sure you're all going to be very excited about. Hi, I'm Daisy.
Yeah, and Remix 10 is actually a super fun mode. You know, this update's already been out for a week or two. I really enjoy Remix 10. It's very easy to just pop it on, have like 10 mini Mario experiences. Each one ends up taking all of, you know, 10 or 15 seconds. It's just really breezy, really fast, and really fun. And the World Star levels, if you're like me and you're trying to get all of like the colored coins for, you know, all three sets of colored coins, they actually get pretty difficult.
Wow.
Which obviously you would expect from World Star,
because it's basically Star World.
I mean, that's literally the reference. Yeah, so it's really cool stuff. I'm really excited to see this, and I hope that we continue to see Super Mario Run get added to in time.
Yeah, it's cool. And I guess there's a feature called Headphone Mario that'll let you listen to your own music, so if you want to put your own music on, you can have World Star Hip Hop.
All right, so that game company,
come on, not even a chuckle,
has announced a port of Flower for iOS devices. This is, of course, very exciting. You know, it's Flower's a great game. I think a lot of us have had really positive experiences with this one.
Just very lovely.
Just a lovely little game. It is available now in the app shop on iTunes, and you can play it for $4.99.
Yeah, I'll be picking that up. Seems like it would be on, like, if you're using it, especially on an iPhone, it could be like a very nice meditative experience, I would imagine.
Oh, totally.
We have news that... Oh, did you have something else about Flower?
Nope, you can go.
We have news that Call from Mighty No. 9 Nine and Jewel from Zero Striker Gunvolt are now playable in Mighty Gunvolt Burst. So lots of DLC. Mighty Gunvolt Burst is like getting the most support out of anything, basically.
This reminds me of that old Super Mario crossover game at this point, where it was, like a Flash game. They're going to actually, they kickstarted like a real version of it using like fake non-licensed properties.
Wasn't that years ago at this point?
Yes, it never came out. I'm still super salty about it. But basically, Mighty Gunvolt Burst has become like the IntiCreates version of that. Like, I feel like we're just, every time we see a new IntiCreates character come up, it's going to end up in this game at this point.
I mean, is it Shantae in this now? Or am I just, is that just wishful thinking? Oh no, Shantae's in
Blaster Master Zero?
Yeah. That's the other crossover game, basically.
But again, IntiCreates.
Yeah, into crossover.
Indeed. We also have word here we're going to be getting more information on the Shin Megami Tensei game for Switch coming on October 23rd. This is, of course, very exciting. I think a lot of us are really, really, really eagerly anticipating some news on this game. So please keep your eyes open. Please look forward to it. And yeah.
I would love if it was a Tokyo Mirage Sessions game, but I get the feeling it's going to be more Shin Megami Tensei mainline, at least, you know, to the degree that Shin Megami Tensei has a mainline anymore. I mean, I know it has the numbered entries, but you know what I mean.
I do. We also have word that Destiny 2 will be getting its version of the well-loved Iron Banner PvP event starting this Tuesday, the same day as the Prestige version of the raid. Iron Banner, of course, is known as the game mode where you go in and all of your power levels are, like, equalized, so you will never have any kind of level or gear advantage over other players. You will get reward tokens in order to buy Iron Banner engrams that have a very special, like, gear with, like, new unique models that are sort of like Viking meets samurai designed. I think they look shit hot. I cannot wait to try and get some of this gear for my warlock. Saigi, I know that you're dipping your toes in Destiny 2. Are you going to try to do any Iron Banner, especially with the knowledge that you'll get tokens even if you lose? So, like, as long as you invest a little time, you will get something out of it?
Oh yeah, once I get to that point.
Excellent. Well, you don't have to be at level 20, I don't think.
That's good.
Excellent. And in some other Destiny news, to wrap up these follow-ups, we also have word that the Xbox platform players of Destiny 1 have finally been granted the ability to play the previously PSN exclusive content. That includes getting some of the PlayStation exclusive weapons like Zen Meteor, Jade Rabbit, doing strikes like Echo Chamber, even getting some of the previously version-exclusive background story ghosts will now be available on both platforms. I think this is kind of crappy. I mean, it's cool that Xbox players can finally get it, but they should have gotten it like a year ago. Slaggy, do you have any thoughts on this one before we move on?
Yeah, I mean, it's, I know that this isn't the only situation where this sort of thing happens, but it still sucks, especially with something as huge as Destiny.
Totally. All right, well then, moving forward, we also have a couple of release date updates for you. The first one is actually the announcement of an all-new game, but it's coming out pretty quick, and it's not really that all-new. This is Street Fighter V Arcade Edition. It's going to be releasing January 16th on PS4. It's going to feature a new arcade mode, visual enhancements, new V-triggers for all of the characters, new extra battle timed challenges to obtain exclusive costumes, and all of the DLC characters that have been announced and released for the game so far. One thing to note is that all of the system changes, so, you know, the new V-triggers, the new visuals, the new costumes, the arcade mode, these actually will be being patched into the core Street Fighter V game. So even if you don't buy the Arcade Edition upgrade, you will still get, you know, the new visuals, the new user interface, the new V-triggers and stuff. So you won't have to buy this. But if you've never dipped your feet into Street Fighter V, you want something that's going to be better than the original release and come with the extra, 12 characters or something, this will be the way to go when it releases for $39.99.
Cool.
We also have word that Spelunker Party, previously released in Japan as Mina de YY Spelunker, will be releasing in North America on Nintendo Switch and PC on October 19th.
Oh.
Indeed. This is, of course, as we have previously discussed here on the show, an updated version of the free-to-play PS4 and Vita Spelunker World. The Switch and PC versions, Spelunker Party, are sort of upgraded into being full games on their own, no microtransactions. It's a $29.99 purchase with single-player, offline, and online multiplayer modes.
Cool.
So please look forward to it. All right, all that having been said, Slaggy, unless you have anything else, I think it's time for some news.
News. Oh my god, news.
All right, first up, we have word here that God Eater 3 has been announced. This is going to be a new console game in the well-loved series. This was announced during a part of the God Eater New Information Announcement Broadcast event, which was held during the series' first orchestral concert. We have already received confirmation that this game will be getting a North American release, although we do not yet know on what platforms or even sort of a rough time frame for the release. We have a couple of visuals, though. It looks pretty good. Looks like it's going to take God Eater to the next level while still sort of doing all the things that we love God Eater for. Slaggy, what do you think about this one?
A little surprised, but I think it's good news for the fans. And, you know, Bandai Namco is probably the least of the disappointing companies of the big Japanese companies. So I'm not surprised that they're, you know, not ignoring a beloved series.
Absolutely. We also have word of another God Eater game. This one is God Eater Resonant Ops. This is going to be the series' first smartphone RPG. It looks pretty interesting to me, actually. It looks like it's really going to still be sort of a gameplay-focused experience rather than being a complete gacha fest. Early registration is available for the game at its official website, and it'll be coming to iOS and Android platforms.
Excellent. We have an announcement of a English language release for the Final Fantasy Ultimania Archive.
What?
This is going to be covering Final Fantasy 1 through Final Fantasy 6. It will be published by Dark Horse in summer of 2018, containing over 300 pages of lore, development details, artwork, and more about the first six games in the series.
This is wild. So, you know, the cool thing about these Ultimania books are that, you know, this is where a lot of our understanding of sort of like the deeper lore of the Final Fantasy games comes from, where we get a lot of like the behind-the-scenes anecdotes, or even like hearing about cut features. Final Fantasy VI, you know, I'm learning that at some point in development, the character Cyan was actually going to learn how to learn tools and stuff and become a second machinist like Edgar, which is why he has that whole sort of subplot that's still in the game about like being unfamiliar with machines. And then in the World of Ruin, he starts like to sort of pick it up a little bit. Like he was actually going to gain the ability to use tools, is kind of what has always been said on the internet. And it's, you know, these books.
Wow.
And, you know, we end up getting anecdotes like that from these Ultimania books. They've been coming out in Japan basically for forever, and that we're going to start getting them released in North America in English is a huge deal. Finally be able to find out if things like that Cyan story are really real. I mean, I've kind of always believed it, but I can't wait to read this stuff myself and really find out.
It might be time for another Final Fantasy retrospective.
Well, I mean, half of the stuff game-wise that we talked about in the last one came ultimately from Ultimania books. So that having been said, yeah, I will be poring over this thing when it releases. I think they're going to be doing multiple volumes. It's just the first volume is Final Fantasy 1 through 6. So yeah, we may have to look into doing that.
Neo Complete Edition is coming to the PC in November, and specifically on November 7th. It will allow you to either choose between running the game at 60 FPS or at 4K. So that's cool to have that choice.
Yeah.
It will include the game and all of the add-ons thus far. And there's also a Kabuto helmet that looks like it's got the like valve on it. So that's cute.
Hella cute with steam coming out of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's super cute. You know, I will note, Neo is a game that a lot of people like a lot. I haven't played it yet, so I'm really excited for this release. I think this is going to be where I jump in.
Excellent.
We also have word here that PlayStation VR is getting an updated model release in Japan on October 14th. have a lot of mixed feelings about this, but, you know, I do want to note it will be releasing in North America at a later date. But basically, they're changing the way, like, the headphone port plugs in. It's going to be located at a different location on the device. It's going to be a little easier to access. The cable that connects the headset and processor unit has been slimmed down. The new processor unit is going to support HDR pass-through, so it'll basically be better for people who use a 4K set and have a PS4 Pro. I'm just kind of bummed about this because, like, PSVR is like a year old. Like, I shouldn't feel like I have an outmoded version just after a year. Like, I think that sucks.
On the other hand, I don't have a PSVR yet, and if it means that the first model will be price dropped, then that's appealing for me.
Yeah, you know, I totally get that, and, like, I do think that's cool, but for me, it's like when I, I have a 4K TV and everything, and, like, when I want to use my PS4 Pro for 4K content, like, I have to disconnect the processor unit so that it can get the proper signal and everything. It's, like, a huge mess right now, and, like, it really sucks that they didn't at least design this in such a way that maybe I could at least upgrade just that part or something. Like, that really sucks.
Yeah.
So, I'm salty about it, but, you know, the older models will probably come down in price if you're lucky enough to find them on store shelves. And, you know, enhancements are always a good thing. I'm just salty.
So, what might make you feel a little bit less salty is that there is a Commodore 64 Mini coming next year. And not only is it going to come with 64 pre-installed games, a joystick, a USB charging cable, a HDMI cable, and, you know, the options for different pixel filter options and save states, but you can use it as a home computer and you can do programming in BASIC.
Yes.
So it comes with 64 games. Commodore 64 was a little bit before my time, so, you know, a lot of these don't have personal meaning to me, but I'm, you know, from what I recognize from, you know, reading up about
it's going to have California games, so that's cool.
Yeah, like California games.
Cybernoid.
Isn't Chip's Challenge a pretty popular one? Yeah, I'm like, I feel like
Impossible Mission, of course.
A lot of these games are ones that, like, oh yeah, I recognize those titles.
Yeah, I some of my old favorite C64 games, because I did have a C64 growing up.
Of course you did.
So some of my favorite ones aren't going to be here, although I am really happy to see Summer Games and Winter Games both present. But some of, like, the really, like, weirder licensed games, like, there's a really incredible Alice in Wonderland game that obviously would never get ported to something like this, but so some of my personal favorite Commodore 64 memories won't be able to be relived here, but really excited about this overall. I think this is really neat, and hey, who knows, you know, if it really does just straight have, like, the Commodore 64 OS present, like it kind of sounds, I'm sure someone's going to figure out a way to have this thing running new disk images immediately.
Right.
So keep my fingers crossed for that, and you know, like, boot, load, run, and all that.
Yeah, so our next piece of news is that Koei Tecmo announced at Tokyo Game Show 2017 that the next Attack on Titan game, Attack on Titan 2, will be a PS4, Vita, Switch, and PC title.
And this is not to be confused with the other Attack on Titan 2 game that we've talked about. That is the 3DS game. While they are both ostensibly, like, action-based Attack on Titan games, this is the one that was done by Omega Force, sort of almost like a Musou-esque experience. And of the two, I think this is the series that is a lot more light. So I'm actually super stoked that it's coming to Switch. You know, I'm really happy to see all these anime games come to Switch. It's already been announced that this game is going to be coming westward, so we will get to play it. And overall, I'm just super, super excited to get to revisit Attack on Titan.
Yeah.
We also have word here that there's going to be a new title in the Umihara Kawase series headed to the Nintendo Switch. This is, of course, super exciting for me. I think Umihara Kawase as a series is sort of like some of the best, like, platforming grappler action games out there. And the idea of getting a new game in that series on my new favorite platform is super exciting.
Yeah, and because we had Yumizod Odyssey come over here, you know, sayonara Umihara Kawase, maybe there's a good chance that we'll get it. I mean, especially with just Switch in general, like, stuff seems to be coming over here.
Absolutely. And last but definitely not least, we also have word out of NIS America that they will be bringing the 25th Ward, the Silver Case, to North America in 2018. This is, of course, one of the well-loved but never brought westward masterpieces of Suda 51 and Grasshopper Manufacture. If you're interested in playing sort of a adventure visual novel style game by those folks, you know, maybe you've played the original Silver Case, you want to see the sequel, here it is for you. Please look forward to it. All right, well, with all that having been said, let's head to our Culture Club. Culture Club, of course, is the segment where we talk about some news stories that maybe aren't related to, like, specific games or announcements or what have you, but nonetheless do have an impact on us as gamers, or at least we have opinions on them as gamers. Slaggy, would you like to get us started with this first one? It's kind of a big news story, actually.
Yeah, this news is that Andrew House, after 27 years with Sony, is stepping down from his position as president and CEO.
What?
Yeah, he will stay as a chairman throughout the year to ensure a smooth transition, unlike my talking right there, to the new president and CEO, who is John Tsuyoshi Kodera, who is now the new president and CEO. He is the current deputy president, or he was formerly the deputy president.
Excellent. You know, this is kind of a big deal. Obviously, Andrew House has been with PlayStation for forever. You know, he was appointed president and group CEO of SCE back in 2011. You may, at this point, it almost seems silly, but you may recall Sony was not always doing as great at PlayStation as they are now. PlayStation 2 obviously was a major success, but PlayStation 3 dropped the ball in a lot of ways.
Yep.
And a lot of people actually really do point at Andrew House as being one of the big reasons why, you know, Sony was really able to get things back on the rails, so to speak. So that he's stepping down is a little surprising and questionable. He has been a huge proponent of, if I'm gonna be shady, a few games that are just really questionable.
Like Knack 2?
Yes, in
and
fact.
Knack 1?
I was gonna say Knack 1 in particular. But that having been said, I think on every level that Andrew House has been a very positive force for Sony and the PlayStation brand, and I think that it's very interesting that he's stepping down. And frankly, I have some concerns for PlayStation moving forward, but, you know, Kodera hasn't given us any reason to doubt him yet, so I'm gonna keep my fingers crossed and hope that he can keep steering the ship. I know that a lot of people give us a lot of flack for being big Nintendo fanboys, but I'm actually of the belief that the industry is at its best when everybody is doing well, and anytime any of the big three or big two in those years are doing really bad, I actually think the whole industry suffers. So
yeah, which means that because of Xbox One, the industry's been suffering for a while.
Ah, and yet, I mean, you know, the bleeding has staunched a little bit, but let's not forget how many studios have closed in the last 2 years.
Yep.
We also have word here that a new Professor Layton anime and game are expected to launch in 2018.
I saw a tweet on Twitter, not related to this, but about Layton. Basically, there are people out there who think Layton is daddy and want him to do things.
Yes, I know you follow me on Twitter.
Okay.
No, but the anime is expected to run in 2018. It's going to be a 26-episode series. And this report actually comes from Total Licensing Magazine. We also got news from Total Licensing Magazine that the Yo-Kai Watch anime will be kicking off its third season in North America in early 2018.
And Europe.
And the Inazuma 11 anime series will be running globally in April of 2018, sort of during the peak of football mania. And it was indicated that the Snack World will be coming to the West in late 2018, early 2019.
Yeah, it seems like that we've been hearing about Snack World for years.
Yep, please look forward to it all.
So you did this on purpose, so I'd have to take this story, right?
Yep.
So basically, the Sony-driven live-action CGI hybrid Sonic the Hedgehog movie, which was not a joke and is still actually a thing, is moving over to Paramount. Most of the team is still there, including Deadpool's director, Tim Miller. So, I mean, you know, part of me is just like, this is going to be a total turd. But then again, knowing how self-aware, like, the Sonic Twitter is, and with the director of Deadpool, I'm sorry, he's the executive producer. But, you know, with him involved, I'm sure sure it'll be pretty self-aware. One can hope.
Yep. Fingers crossed that it doesn't turn into a complete mess. We also have some news out of Sony. According to Sony Interactive Entertainment, they will be showing some quote-unquote big new game announcements and updates during the Media Showcase 2017 press event at Paris Games Week later this month.
Wait, is Paris Games Week a thing that's been going on? Because why do I feel like we never hear about that?
We talk about this every year.
Do we?
We do.
Oh, I guess I feel like, I don't know, like it just sounds like Fashion Week or something.
Yes. So we can expect the news to start kicking off on October 30th. Please look forward to it, and that's definitely something that we will be talking about next month.
And good news for Nintendo, we have the news that the Switch has given Nintendo their best launch year physical sales in the U.S. since 1995. And
yeah,
that's when the sales
wild.
Started being tracked. So
that is absurd. I mean, something to note, and, you know, there's actually been some pretty great discussions on this over on GAF. Matt Piscatella, who is from the research market company NPD, they sort of track games sales in the U.S., among other things. But that's the context we're talking about right now. He actually posts on GAF and actually had a whole conversation about this. Of course, you know, most Nintendo platform launches are toward the end of the year. So a lot of people were very suspicious that, you know, it wouldn't be hard to have higher year one numbers considering the Switch launched in March. But Mr. Piscatella did clarify that, you know, while that was true of the statement as he initially made it, first off, that ignores all of their handhelds that have launched in a similar launch window to the Switch, of which there have been several. And obviously, Nintendo's handhelds are typically extremely good performers. But so far, it also appears to be tracking ahead of all of their other consoles that have released since 95. When they were being tracked, when adjusted for time. So it does appear to be tracking in terms of software a bit better than even the Wii was.
And the Wii was crazy.
So, you know, obviously the year for the Switch won't be over yet if we're really going to talk about a launch-aligned date or date-aligned comparison. But so far, everything appears to be going pretty well for the Switch. And again, you know, like I was just saying, when everyone in this space is doing well, I think we all benefit. So I'm super, super happy to hear that. We also have some news that last week was a tough week for Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite. Basically, a system that is utilized in Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite sort of isn't working as designed at the moment, and this is making it very easy for tournament play to become Spider-Man's fighting Spider-Man's using the Reality Stone. The TLDR on this
destination,
one.
No items.
All right. The TLDR on this one is that, you know, when you're playing MVCI, you get to pick what Infinity Stone you want to take into the fight with you. They're always going to be Infinity Gems. I don't care. But anyway, you get to say what stone you want to take in with you. The Reality Stone gives you, like, a single button press, very slow-moving projectile. The thing is, if you're using Spider-Man and you use his web ball that he has had for, you know, all of these Marvel vs. Capcom games, basically you can create an endless infinite combo utilizing the web ball and the Reality Stone projectile, because the game's two different systems that are implemented to prevent endless combos do not apply to the way that these two moves interact with one another. You know, your hit stun deterioration isn't going to come into account. Your grounded attacks and damage reduction isn't going to come into account because, again, of the way that you're hitting with the Reality Stone projectile, hitting with the web ball in order to trap the opponent, and then, you know, the opponent can't move, but it's not being treated as like a standard hit stun. So it's basically an extremely easy to do infinite combo. I have tried this myself, and I have done this, and I am not an expert level player. And obviously, expert level players are going to use whatever characters are winning the meta, and right now Spider-Man is the meta. So definitely very tricky, putting a lot of people in the higher levels off of MVCI. And then the second issue we're having, or the game is having, is that there have been multiple tournaments last week that did not get very many players. You know, local, like, regional competitions, including, like, the SoCal regionals. People, you know, in the hundreds are showing up for this game's tournaments. But at Milan Games Week, the Milan Games Week tournament series, there was literally only 13 people signed up to play.
What's with all these games weeks? Paris, New York, Milan.
So, you know, definitely some scary stuff going on with the Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite player base. You know, obviously, again, it's best when everyone is doing well. I want Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite to pull together. I want it to get patched. I want it to get long-term support that makes it a better game, like we've seen with Street Fighter V. Right this very moment, between the extremely poor sales in Japan and Europe, we don't have North American numbers yet, but once the NPD numbers hit in mid-October for September sales, so probably next weekend, I would say probably Monday the 16th if I had to guess, I think it's going to tell us a pretty scary story about how MVCI is doing. And I don't think, you know, no matter how much Capcom pisses me off, I don't want to see them do so poorly that they can't move forward. And I have some concerns about MVCI being a nail in a potential coffin. So let's hope it's not as bad as we're fearing.
Yeah. So this is an interesting little piece of news culture, so to speak.
You know, I was initially, we were going to talk about this in news, like the core part of it, but it actually has kind of become a bigger story since then.
So the original version of Battlefront 2, you know, Star Wars, has recently just been updated with 64-player online multiplayer support and crossplay.
Yes, and the really cool thing about that, you know, this is for both the Steam and GOG versions. GOG themselves are the ones who actually came and patched this game and put these new servers up. You may recall we talked about earlier on this show, probably a year or two ago now, that because, was it GameSpy, the old network online play service that ended up going down?
Something like that.
And, you know, Battlefront 2 had used that service, so when the service went down, the game lost its online play. It was a big deal. A lot of us were super sad. GOG stepped in and has taken it on themselves to get it going again.
But the servers are effed.
Well, hold on. You know, they also allowed this patch to go for the Steam version. So not just the GOG version, but even for the Steam version, made this feature available again. However, and this is Slaggy, where you take it back.
The servers are effed. And also, on top of that, people are leaving reviews on the Steam version. One of them featured in this Kotaku article says, "Thanks for calling it the classic version, because it reminds me that this is the only good one." And the reason why this is kind of LOL is because, you know, the EA and DICE Battlefront 2 is on its way, so, yeah.
Yeah. But hey, in other kind of crummy news, Forza Motorsport 7's series mainstay VIP upgrade is in some dire straits at the moment. So, you know, previously the VIP upgrade has given players exclusive cars, special online events, and double credit earnings on races. When the VIP upgrade for Forza 7 was announced, it came with 5 limited use double credit bonuses. As well as, you know, a fewer exclusive stuff. A lot of people, of course, very angry about this, and so many people have voiced their concerns that they're actually going back to the drawing board to reevaluate what they can do for longtime fans.
Wow.
Most longtime fans do feel that the double racing credit bonus was actually like the main reason to get the VIP pass. You know, they've been doing that for multiple iterations of the game now. Because you use the credit earned in races to buy your new cars, you know, to upgrade things, it's kind of a big deal, and one that many people thought was worth paying an extra $20 for. So a lot of people super upset, but they're going back to fix it. And once again, I just want to say, you know, I know that we hear a lot that complaining about this stuff online, reaching out to companies online is, you know, a waste of time or whatever. But I feel like we keep seeing time and again, if enough people complain, stuff will get fixed.
If only that worked outside of games, too.
America! So we also want to wrap this segment up with word that there is a new Bring Arts line figure of Sora from Kingdom Hearts 3. Bring Arts, of course, is the little brother of the Play Arts series of figures. Bring Arts tend to be a little smaller. I guess the idea is you could bring them places. Get it?
Cute.
Either way, this is going to be Sora's second form version. It looks very cool. I'm super into it. But perhaps more excitingly, they also announced a Bring Arts figure of Veltal, the mecha from Xenogears. Obviously, seeing any Xenogears love in 2017 is rad as shit.
Yeah.
I'm super, super excited to buy that toy. Cannot wait to see what it looks like when it's properly modeled and sculpted. All right. Did you have anything else for the Culture Club, Slaggy?
Nope.
Then why don't you take us off in a...
Controversial.
Oh my god.
So, as you know, we have Wolfenstein 2 The New Colossus coming very soon. And basically, its ad campaign is very anti-Nazi. And,
as you would expect from a Wolfenstein game.
And basically, like, you know, to the point where the official Wolfenstein Twitter says, make America Nazi free again.
Yes.
And so,
well, because, you know, the New Colossus is specifically about America being infested by Nazis who take over the country. Could you imagine a Nazi as the president?
Right. But basically, some people aren't having this, in the words of whatever Adore Delano's name was before she was Adore. Danny Noriega on American Idol. Some people weren't having it. So, like, you know, people, of course, are saying, like, oh, this is SJW, political BS, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, but for me, the really exciting part here was sort of the Bethesda official response. Bethesda's VP of public relations, Pete Hines, gave what I thought was actually a really incendiary response. And I mean, it shouldn't be considered incendiary. I think that actually says a lot about where we are right now. But, you know, Pete Hines basically said, we're certainly aware of current events in America and how they relate to some of the themes in Wolfenstein 2. Wolfenstein has been a decidedly anti-Nazi series since the first release more than 20 years ago. We aren't going to shy away from what the game is about. We don't feel it's a reach for us to say Nazis are bad and un-American, and we're not worried about being on the right side of history here. So now I'm like, I feel like this guy is more qualified to be this country's vice president than our actual vice president.
You're making Game Boy too political. Games shouldn't be political.
Pete Hines 2020.
In some not as political news, but still controversial, we have an announcement from Nintendo that the Wii Shop channel for the Nintendo Wii, or, you know, also you were able to access it on Wii U, right?
Yes.
Anyway, it is shutting down on January 31st, 2019, after just a little under 13 years of service.
It is, of course, worth noting that we are getting this news quite far in advance. You know, people will be able to buy things from the Wii Shop channel into 2019, which is cool. But, you know, there's actually, like, some really, and this is why this is so controversial, there's some really incredible software releases only available on the Wii through the Wii Shop channel, particularly in North America. You know, there were a lot of virtual console releases for the NES of games that never properly came out here, stuff like Euphoria, which was really fantastic. Obviously, this is the only way that we've ever gotten, like, the actual proper version of the PC Engine Dracula X game.
Yeah.
Obviously, you know, the precursor to Symphony of the Night, which, you know, it did get a port on the PSP Dracula X collection, but that wasn't a perfect port, whereas the emulation on the virtual console was, like, perfect.
For Rondo of Blood, right? Yeah.
Yeah, Rondo of Blood.
Yeah.
Dracula X.
The thing that's so controversial to me is that the Wii came out 11 years ago.
Okay, well, people being old isn't controversial.
Yes, it is.
So the thing is, again, you know, there's some really great software. You look at stuff like Castlevania Rebirth, which is a remake of the Game Boy's Castlevania The Adventure, or The Adventure, not an adventurer, it's just an adventure, which is, you know, considered by many to be sort of like a return to form for the series for people who didn't like the Metroidvania bent of all more recent Castlevanias. And more recent Castlevanias in this context is still talking about games that are 5-plus years old. So, thanks, Konami.
Yeah.
But, you know, so anyway, the point here is, I know a lot of people already not using their Wii U's, go LOL Wii U, see Wii U games in the store and literally laugh about it. Obviously, with the Wii, it's even worse. But if you haven't checked out some of these gems, and you never have, you're losing your opportunity completely here, and you might want to look into that.
And some news that is also controversial, maybe more controversial than Wii Shop closing after, you know, 12, 13 years. The Gravity Rush 2 online services will be shutting down after 1 year of the game being around January 19th.
Literally 1 year to the date of its Japanese release.
So you won't be able to send and receive challenges, do rankings, send and receive treasure hints, photo ghosts, or acquire dusty tokens and the rewards from such.
Yeah, that sucks. It is is cool. Sony is actually going to be increasing the drop rate of Dusty tokens as part of an event that will be lasting until online services are shut down. So if you want any of the like costumes or whatever that are tied to Dusty tokens, you'll be able to get them if you go right now. But dude, this game hasn't even been out a year. By the time it hits the 1 year mark, it will lose functionality. That shit's whack. And, you know, a lot of people are upset about it. Not as many as I would like, but this game did not have that many fans, which I guess is the problem to start with. But it does raise some real questions. You know, I remember I used to be, when talking about like online features and always online functionalities, I used to think that stuff like this would never happen. But more and more, we're seeing that not only can it happen, but it is happening. We're seeing online mobile social games get canceled after less than a year. If you put premium money into it, you're just SOL. You know, now we're seeing a game where it hasn't even seen gigantic price drops and it's going to lose functionality. People are going to buy this game thinking it's still somewhat recent and not be able to experience the whole game. That sucks. So this leaves a really sour taste in my mouth. It's controversial because it sucks, and I don't think there's any positive spin on this one.
So we have some news about Atlus again. This time they issued a DMCA takedown notice to a PS3 emulation developer group on their Patreon because the RPCS3 group, which is the PS3 emulator group for, you know, PC emulation on PS3.
PS3 emulation on PC.
Yes. Isn't that what I said?
Oh, I thought you had flipped it and reversed it.
Oh, well, anyway, basically it showed progress of Persona 5 playing on PC. And of course, Atlus doesn't want Persona 5 played except on their terms. So they said, we want this taken down, and Patreon actually did not remove the page, but Atlus is like, no, we want you to remove not just any references to Persona 5, but their page, because they're circumventing our DRM protections.
Yep, pretty janky. You know, something that's interesting about this is that quite a few people in the games community, myself included, actually think that this came entirely from Atlus Japan, although it was obviously issued through Atlus USA, but they obviously don't get to make the choices on these things. In the actual statement that Atlus USA issued on the matter, they groused a little bit about the lack of an official PC version. You know, this is something that we've actually seen a lot. There have been a lot of indications that Atlus Japan is very reticent to put this series on PC for some reason, and a lot of people feel like this passage in the statement, which I'm about to read, are sort of indicative that Atlus USA might be just as frustrated as we are. So, basically, Atlus USA said, we believe that our fans best experience our titles on the actual platforms for which they are developed. We don't want their first experiences to be frame drops, crashes, or other issues that can crop up in emulation that we have not personally overseen. We understand that many Persona fans would love to see a PC version. And while we don't have anything to announce today, we are listening. For now, the best way to experience Persona 5 is on PS4 and PS3. A lot of people here have noted that for Atlus USA to actually put in writing that, you know, there isn't a PC version of Persona 5, but we're listening, we'd like to do it. A lot of people feel like that's Atlus USA's way of putting Atlus Japan's feet to the fire, so to speak. Obviously, the deeper reason why this is controversial is that emulation, it has largely been argued, is not in and of itself illegal, does not typically cross any kind of IP protections. Obviously, it would seem Patreon agreed on that point. However, Atlus was pretty successful at creating waves on this and making a real problem for the RPCS3 team. You know, obviously, I'm a fan of emulation. It's not really my preferred way to play games most of the time, but, you know, if you're using emulation to play a game that you've already paid for, I think that's perfectly legit. Mm-hmm. I think it's really shitty and terrible that Atlus, whomever, whichever voice at Atlus is the one that made this call, I think it's pretty shitty, and I'm really happy that Patreon didn't back down. I thought that was cool. Do you have any thoughts on this, either aspect of this story, Slaggy?
Yeah, I mean, it's tricky, but, I mean, it's hard to keep rooting for Atlus and Persona 5 when there's just been so much controversy around it, that game. Just kind of like, really? We're still talking about Persona 5? I'm just kind of tired of it, honestly.
I feel that. Well, then let us talk about the last controversial piece of news we have this week. This is a pretty low-stakes one. The new release of Mario & Luigi Superstar Saga and Bowser's Minions for 3DS has been very well received. People are loving this 3DS remake of the 2003 GBA classic. However, there is one cameo that was very meaningful to many fans in the original version of the game that did not make its way over to the 3DS remake. This, of course, is Geno from Super Mario RPG. He originally cameoed in the Star Stash Smash arcade minigame to explain the rules of how to play the game. In the 3DS version, he has been completely removed with nothing taking in his place, so instead you simply get pop-up instructions on screen. A lot of people, of course, are noting it's very likely that Geno remains the property of Square/Square Enix.
Yeah.
Obviously, Nintendo's not gonna go to the licensing board to, you know, pay for using Geno in this remake in such a minor way, but at the same time, for fans of the series, diehards and what have you, this does sort of impact what is otherwise an unabashedly better version of the game. Do you have any thoughts, Slaggy?
Well, you know those Super Mario RPG fans. They are basically the type that would go to a McDonald's and start a riot over a special type of sauce.
You know, I was going to say, yes, we are, but then you compared us to literally the worst fandom on the internet, and
wait,
now I'm mad
you
about
to
it.
The Steven Universe fandom?
Oh, shit.
And this is coming from someone who adores Steven Universe.
Fair.
Hashtag toxic fandoms. Hashtag fandom in general is toxic. Taste of your lips, I'm on a ride.
All right, so let's move on to our discussion. This, of course, is Spooky Scenarios.
Ooh.
This is going to be a pretty lightweight conversation. Our real goal here is just to talk about some spooky stuff in mostly otherwise not spooky games. Well, you know, so if you're interested in some low impact spook to get your October started, maybe you're having some issues like I am, or maybe you're just, you know, scared of scary games like Slagkick.
Mm-hmm.
This is some fun ways to sort of get into the spirit without having to scream, cry, and wet yourself, again, like Slagkick.
Hey, you said you wouldn't tell anyone.
So, this is going to be a quick conversation. We will probably talk a little more than we need to about some of these games, but that's what you listen to us for, right? Slag, you want to get us started with your first favorite spooky scenario?
Yes, well, when we discussed doing an episode on spooky scenarios, it made me think of the scenarios in Roller Coaster Tycoon, and I specifically remember one of my favorite ones, which is in Roller Coaster Tycoon 2. It's called Infernal Views. So, you know, the challenge is, it's one of the kind of the a little bit more challenging scenarios. You have to build 10 roller coasters with at least a 6.0 excitement rating, but what makes it spooky is that it takes place in, rocky terrain with red water, which is meant to be lava. So basically, it looks like you're going to Hades, and, you know, you don't necessarily have to keep up with the theming, but, you know, there's, like, spooky theming available, and for me, you know, one of the highlights of going back to revisit Roller Coaster Tycoon, which I do more frequently than most people maybe would expect, but you listeners probably wouldn't be surprised about, is going and making some spooky rides in hell, because even if I don't end up finishing... Right? Even if I don't end up finishing, you know, the actual challenge, I just love having that spooky environment to really, you know, drive home the theming. And,
can I just say, I love, like, one of the pre-built coasters on that stage. It, like, goes into, like, the lava mountain.
Yeah,
and it's
yeah.
just, like, how cool would that be to ride in hell?
Right? And, I mean, there was one time, I can't remember if it was pre-Game Buoy days, but there was one time I was over here.
No, that was probably Game Buoy year 2.
Was it?
I think so, because I'm thinking about how I had my, what TV I had and how it was connected to my PC at the time.
Oh, yeah, and I basically just watched you making coasters and stuff in Infernal Views. And so, like, you know, I have a lot of fond memories of that. This would also be a great park to put in Mr. Bones Wild Ride, if you're not familiar with Mr. Bones Wild Ride.
Why don't you tell us about it?
Mr. Bones Wild Ride is a fan-made... ride for Roller Coaster Tycoon. Particularly Roller Coaster Tycoon 2. As you know, Roller Coaster Tycoon allows for custom rides, which is really, really cool, and, you know, there's been a huge fan community for, like, the history of it. Basically, Mr. Bones Wild Ride is I believe it's the ghost train style, or it might just be, the little car ride or something, but anyways, it's a little slow, gentle ride. tried, but it takes 4 years of in-game time to complete. It's a 30,696-foot track, and so, you know, it doesn't take four real years to complete, but, you know, four in-game years to complete. So, basically, it has, like, skeleton theming, and you're able to see what the people are thinking in Roller Coaster Tycoon, of course. And people were all saying, I want to get off Mr. Bones Wild Ride. And it just took off to become a meme with spooky, scary skeletons, that meme song. And there was even, like, a creepypasta about Mr. Bones Wild Ride being a real ride at a Busch Garden theme park.
Wow.
So,
and, you know, I have to ask, in Planet Coaster, which is itself the spiritual successor of this series, has anyone remade Mr. Bones Wild Ride?
I don't know. I haven't spent as much time with Planet Coaster as I wish I would have been able to, partially because I've only, since the, you know, summer, had a PC really powerful enough to run it reliably, but...
Your homework for the next week is to find out if that's the case, and if so, ride it in, like, full 3D mode and take that ride through hell and lose 4 years of your life.
I can do a capture of it with my video card. It has the ability just to capture right off of card, so I'll have to figure that out.
Otherwise, Game Buoy Let's Plays. It's gonna be shit posting from here, folks.
Yeah, so Mr. Bones Wild Ride. So not Mr. Bones Wild Ride was not part of Infernal Views, but I don't see why you wouldn't be able to put it in there.
Fantastic.
What is your first one?
My first one is actually a stage from Echo the Dolphin.
Oh, I know where you're going with this.
People who are familiar with Echo the Dolphin know exactly where I'm going. People who think that Echo the Dolphin is just like a cute ocean life simulator have no idea. Obviously, I'm talking about Welcome to the Machine. I am including the boss sequence after the stage Welcome to the Machine, which is the Vortex Queen. Basically, Welcome to the Machine is one of the hardest stages of any game I've ever played. It's like Cuphead hard, because I know that's where everyone is talking about right now. Obviously, well known as like the hardest Echo stage. It's basically an auto-scrolling stage that scrolls very fast. It changes direction multiple times every 10 seconds. It's about a 6 minute endurance test.
6 minutes and 66 seconds.
And the thing is, Echo basically can get crushed and will get crushed repeatedly. The game works to like trick you, and like pillars will come up and smash you because, you know, it's a machine. It's like actually supposed to be, I've always heard it said, like a whole commentary on like capitalism and the way that it eats us alive, and, you know, consumer culture and what have you.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, so in addition to just already being this incredible hard design stage that's like a real test of like your reflexes, your memorization, and your awareness of how to play the game at this point. But in addition, you have what are called vortex drones that fly in off screen, and if they get you, will kill the shit out of you. So it's basically this game. It has like this really minimalistic but super tense music. It's like a constant 6 minutes of challenge with basically no like release. So it's just like tension, tension, tension. Tension. Then, if you get to the Vortex Queen, you are now fighting a giant floating alien, sort of in the style of a xenomorph, that you have to try and ram with your dolphin head while avoiding its attacks to basically tear its body apart and dismember it.
Yeah, you know, Ridley Scott's cinematic adaptation of that sequence is just some of the most mind-blowing 6 or so minutes of cinema that you'll ever see.
So
there's not actually a Ridley Scott Echo the Dolphin game, although if one was to make a Echo the Dolphin, movie, then it would have to be Ridley Scott, I think.
Well, and it has to be noted, the section where you fight the Vortex Queen is actually called The Last Fight. In the North American version, which released before the Japanese version, if you die while fighting the Vortex Queen, you have to restart at the beginning of Welcome to the Machine. And you will die fighting the Vortex Queen. But it gets worse from there, because in early versions of the game, early releases, revisions, if you're using the invincibility cheat code, once the Vortex Queen eats you, the game will freeze, Echo will remain spinning, and the screen will simply flash various colors of red until you turn it off. It is terrifying. The Japanese release does not feature this, and they have actually a Japanese exclusive level after that you will go to if the vortex queen eats you, called the stomach, where you have to escape from the stomach of the vortex queen in order to resume fighting her.
Wow, sci-fi body horror.
Yeah, that's actually what Echoed the Dolphin truly is. I'm not joking.
Yeah, with a whole, like, weird connection to Pink Floyd, too.
Right? Pretty much. So that's my pick for spooky scenarios. Slaggy, take it away.
All right, well, mine's a little more lighthearted and kind of timely because, you know, there's a new DuckTales.
Life is like
there's a new
hurricane.
DuckTales cartoon series, which is great, airing on Disney XD. And, of course, arguably one of the classic Capcom platformers was DuckTales. You know, we've talked about it time and time again. I'm just going to give a quick shout out to Transylvania, which has always been my favorite level. You know, there's like mummy ducks and like, you know, just spooky enemies and all sorts of graves, and you have to go through magic mirrors, and there's abandoned mine carts too. And so it's really, you know, I mean, aside from the moon, which has, you know, amazing music and is also a classic level, it's always been one of my very favorite levels. And, you know, you get to fight Magicka Dispel, the vampire witch ducks, who is like always been my favorite villain. And, you know, it was so central to the original version of the game that, you know, it was one of the various levels that you played through. But then for the final battle, you had to go back to Transylvania. In the remake from Way Forward, they changed that to be like kind of like a fiery cave instead. But, you know, so Transylvania was kind of a very iconic level for the, you know, DuckTales platformer game.
Indeed. Man, I want to replay that DuckTales platformer so bad. It sucks that the Disney Afternoon Collection didn't release on Switch.
Yeah.
God damn it. For my next pick, and this is going to be a really fast one, I'm actually picking the Bayonetta series, specifically Bayonetta 2, which kind of seems to go without saying, you know, this is a whole game where, you know, despite not being a horror game, you know, you're taking trips to hell or Inferno, trying to save people's souls from Inferno, trying to summon demons that you keep bound by your hair from Inferno. Just the whole game is spooky as shit. It devils everywhere. First stage of the first game is a graveyard, fighting angels, having demons as pets, then fighting demons and having other kinds of demons as pets. It's all very spooky, but it's not horrific. It's easy to get into. One of the most fun things about Bayonetta, I think we would all agree, is sort of that ambience and atmosphere. Obviously, they take it to an over-the-top place, so it's not, like, scary in any meaningful fashion. But, you know, at Bayonetta, if you really take a step back and look at some of this stuff, like, that's actually pretty creepy, gross, and or disturbing. And that, for me, definitely fits the criteria of a spooky scenario.
Oh, yeah, I mean, I would say that Bayonetta is, like, Diablo levels of heaven and hell imagery, just kind of very gothic in terms of, like, its flavor. But, you know, as you said, Bayonetta is very camp in the way it does it. She's kind of the Elvira of video games, really. All right, real quickly, I want to talk about my next one, which is the Thrifty Megamart Abandoned Site from Pokemon Sun and Moon.
I was expecting Pokemon to come up in this conversation, but not Thrifty Megamart.
Well, the thing that I love about Thrifty Megamart is it's one of the Trial Captain's trials. And so basically you have to go into, there's the Thrifty Megamart is kind of like a the equivalent of the Pokemon in Sun and Moon, and there's a location of Thrifty Megamart that's been abandoned on Ula Ula Island, and it's Acerola's trial. And so basically you have to go in and use your Rotom Dex to try and take pictures of ghost Pokemon, because there's like a ghost Pokemon who is kind of like haunting it, and that's why it's abandoned. And so it's basically like a Fatal Frame game for about 15 minutes, and then the totem Pokemon ends up being a Mimikyu. So it's really a fun, spooky flavor. And, you know, I love, like I said, the kind of homage to Fatal Frame. Like, we've talked about on Stabcast how these trial captains, are like in the totem Pokemon, are like really an interesting twist on, you know, the traditional gym battle that we are so used to. But this one was definitely one of my favorites.
Excellent. So, I think it goes without saying, but for the next game, I am actually going to go over to Earthbound. We're going to talk about the final battle there against Gyagas. I've always struggled with how to say this name. In Japan, it's just Gigu, which is a lot easier. I guess it's probably Gigas, but I've also heard people call it Gygas and stuff. So either way, y'all know who I'm talking about because he's the swirly skull face of evil, possibly also a fetus, known in-game as the embodiment of evil and the universal cosmic destroyer. The thing is, for the most part, Earthbound is not a game, or Mother 2, is not a game that I would describe as a horror game. And yet, the final battle of the game is like the stuff that nightmares are made of.
So it's like almost like an Echo of the Dolphins sort of shift in tone.
I suppose that it is. And the thing is, basically, at the end of the game, you all end up going back in time in order to attack Gygas in the Cave of the Past. He's basically being held within the Devil's Machine, which was, created to contain his power. And the fight is actually really cool because you basically can't win it. And I hate to spoil this, but I'm going to. One of the characters in the game has the ability Prey, and literally the only thing that you can do in order to win this fight is basically heal to keep your party alive and just pray for success. And, the game has a really cool narrative thing that it does in order to make that work and present it in a way that's really heartfelt and stuff. But literally, this is a fight so unconquerable and so intimidating. Literally, all you can do to win is pray. You can only just pray. You cannot win it with brute force. I think that's hella cool and scary because, again, there's light and sound cues that are very disturbing. There's the visual stuff that, people on the internet have talked about forever. He looks like a fetus because presumably you're in the past. Looks like a terrifying, inhuman human face, possibly being torn apart in a pool of red blood. It's scary stuff. And again, in this game that is otherwise very pleasant and lighthearted. So, yeah, Gygas.
Yeah, and I'm really hoping that you'll finally take your Echo the Dolphin x Earthbound fanfiction out of beta so we can really appreciate that, Welcome to the Machine, Gygas. It's disturbing. I can't believe you wrote that, but it's really well written.
The thing is, you're joking about this, but I'm literally already
looking for lore connections.
No, I was just going to call it Welcome to the Devil's Machine.
Well, get on that. That's your homework. I'll look for Mr. Bones Wild Ride. You get to write a Echo the Dolphin and Earthbound crossover spooky creepypasta.
All right, move forward, bro.
All right, so really quickly, I want to talk about another NES Capcom platformer that I always bring up. Sometimes Captain Spike's like, really? But this time it's very fitting, definitely, because it's Adventures in the Magic Kingdom, which is the game set in Walt Disney's Magic Kingdom, which is actually the Disney World one, but whatever. It's like, Disneyland, basically. There is a Haunted Mansion level that, the thing that's kind of cool about Adventures in the Magic Kingdom, if you haven't heard me talk about it before, is that a lot of the game styles are very different. The Autopia one is like a little racing game. The Space Mountain one, you have to like press directions and button presses input quick enough. And so it's kind of cool that there's like these different, game styles within. The Haunted Mansion level is pretty much a traditional platformer, but it's really spooky. You start out outside where there's like lots of ghosts and goblins, and there's like a really creepy looking one that if you are killed by it, it will like the game over screen will be, instead of game over's usually like just a normal game over screen, but it'll have like this creepy looking ghost, like I was seeing like, ooh. And so like I remember being a little kid like really creeped out by that, and it's maybe not by modern standards very challenging platforming, but I always remember that would be the one I would do last because it was always so difficult. There'd be like flying books flying around and like levitating chairs and stuff, and it definitely takes the and I would say like the Haunted Mansion ride in the Disney parks is campy and it's spooky, but it's meant to be fun and spooky. It's just kind of overall creepy in Adventures in the Magic Kingdom.
Why does every one of these like are opinions on stuff and, like, our lists. Why do you always bring Adventures to the Magic Kingdom into it? Literally every time. Our listeners probably know more about that game at this point than most game historians do.
Yeah, that and Barbie for NES.
So, for my next pick, I'm going with Minecraft, and I know LOL, but I'm thinking back to the first time I played Minecraft years and years ago now. I was playing it beta, the version that was still, like, based in, like, JavaScript or whatever, and I was just thinking back to, like, that first night of survival and, like, having to spelunk into a cave to get, you know, protection from the various creepers and what have you, spiders and what and all that, and then spelunking and, like, getting lost in the caves that popped up underground, and everything's dark and, like, I ain't got no torches, and obviously eventually getting brutally killed by skeletons with arrows. And it occurs to me that, you know, obviously survival gaming is, like, a big deal right now. It's kind of, like, one of the big focuses in, like, gaming online right now. And it's just such an interestingly effective conceit that Minecraft brought to the table there, which I think for a lot of us was really our first time interfacing with that style of gameplay. And it really, you know, you start off, it's, like, daytime, you're just like, oh, I'm happy, I'm building a house, I'm cutting down trees. And then the next thing, you are under attack, bitch, you better run. Mm-hmm. And it's just I think first off, really interesting paradigm shift or expectation shift, and just a really cool from a design standpoint that, you know, really spawned an entire genre of gaming.
Excellent.
What about you next, Slaggy?
So my next one is a 4-player dungeon in Final Fantasy 14, A Realm Reborn. It's Hauke Manor. And so basically,
I thought it was gonna be Tamtara just because you've run it too many times.
Ugh. Well, I mean, Tamtara has, like, a cultist thing going on, but I love Hauke Manor because, of course, I love, like, the appeal of, like, a haunted mansion. You know, there's lots of games that have various haunted mansion things. I just talked about one. But the cool thing about Hauke Manor is, you know, it's a MMO dungeon, so you get to go through and, you know, go into the basement, and there's, like, different spooky things to fight. But what's really cool is if you care about the lore of Final Fantasy 14, which, I mean, it has some of the best lore of any Final Fantasy game. Basically, the manor was owned by a Elizin, which is an elf named Lady Amadine, and basically she was really vain, and, you know, she was rumored to bathe in the blood of her virgin servants to you know, keep her youthful and beautiful appearance. But basically, when the calamity hit, which was the end of Final Fantasy 14 1.0, she suffered hideous scars and signed away her soul to try to cling onto her beauty. So I love that, like, you know, for those of us who, you know, run the game, play the game and run this dungeon, it's just like, oh yeah, going through the spooky dungeon, but to, like, really think about the story of it is like, damn. And then during her fight, you have to, like, put out spooky lanterns and stuff, so it's all very fun. You know, it's not actually scary, but it's got a very spooky flavor to it, and I always enjoy going to it. And then there's also, you know, a hard mode too, with, like, kind of like a different story and different set of bosses, so it's cool the way that you know, those dungeons work in Final Fantasy 14.
Yeah, so my next pick is going to Batman Arkham Asylum. Those of you who have played the game probably already know where this is going, but basically in Batman Arkham Asylum, one of the major villains is, of course, the Scarecrow. And the Scarecrow, you're familiar probably with the character via, you know, Batman the Animated Series or the comic books or the movies. He utilizes fear gas in order to cause hallucinations. While a lot of games do hallucination sequences, there are two games on this list I'm including. This is number one. And I think this is the first time I was playing a game, my character had hallucinations, and it scared the shit out of me. Basically, you know, the whole world deforms around you. The Scarecrow becomes, like, this giant, like, kaiju-sized villain in the sky, like, cackling at you and making threats. And there's all these visual effects going on screen. I actually found it very upsetting. And in fact, in researching for this episode, I was going to, like, replay the game, and I ended up just, like, watching a YouTube clip, and even then, like, turning it off. I actually found it very effective. I found it pretty decently upsetting. Obviously, like, if you're listening to this sequence or to this conversation, you're like, these people are weak, I never get scared. Well, yeah, then you're not going to get scared. But if you're playing this game, it's on, like, a giant, you know, 50 plus inch TV, you're just a foot or two away from it, you have your gaming headphones on, you're in your gamer chair, and then suddenly all this terrifying stuff happens to you, and you, like me, play in the dark in the middle of the night, it's pretty upsetting. So I actually actually thought that was really, really well done. Fantastic, like, straight-up horror sequence in a game that otherwise I would not classify as even a horror adjacent. Slaggy?
All right, so my next game is World of Warcraft, which has a lot of very spooky moments. You know, one of the, not like, you know, the main part of the Warcraft lore, but what started coming, you know, in particularly in Warcraft 3 was the Forsaken Undead and Lady Sylvanas, so, you know, the Undead Scourge. So, you know, even though Orcs versus Humans has always been kind of the core of Warcraft, it was actually really a lot of the Forsaken stuff that I really enjoyed when I first started playing the game. And so, for that reason, my pick is Ice Crown Citadel, which, you know, there's definitely spookier, like, themed, like, you know, Karazhan or Stratholme, which are more, like, you know, it's kind of traditionally spooky, but Ice Crown Citadel is an ice palace full of zombies and undeads, and, you know, split up into various sections. There's some where there's, like, the Blood Princes and, like, the undead elf vampires. There's kind of, like, the science spooky laboratory where, good news, everybody! And, like, you know, there's just, like, undead all over the place, and, of course, the final boss is the Lich King Arthas. So I thought I wanted would include that as my World of Warcraft pick, because first of all, I have really fond memories of running it when it was current content. You know, a lot of the other ones, because I came later to the game, you know, I experienced after their initial, you know, appearance in the game, like Nextramus and such. But Ice Crown Citadel, I wanted to shout out because it's a different type of spooky setting that we don't frequently see, and I appreciate it for that.
Fantastic. So I am actually going to go for another another unexpected pick. Hopefully unexpected. This one is the tricky level 14 stage from the original Lemmings. And you might be laughing like, LOL, Lemmings, what? But this stage is basically something out of, like, Lovecraft. You know, there are giant tentacles coming up out of the ground. You have these, like, skulls with, like, horns and pentagrams and blood dripping from the ceilings with, you know, skeleton bones and, you know, just, like, sort of there suspended by blood and gore. And it's just, like, really a creepy visual. And it's one of those things that, like, now with how far games have come, it's a little less upsetting. It's a little less surprising. But, you know, 20, 30 years ago, some of us are seeing this for the first time. And it's like some next level weirdness going on right here. I actually showed this to Slaggy earlier because, you know, it was my expectation and understanding that he probably didn't have experience with the original Lemmings. And I want to say,
I did, but not with this level.
I want to say, Slaggy, what did you think of this level when I showed it to you?
It's disturbing. There's, like, intestinal innards and, like, skeletal hands and, like, rib cages and, like, bloody, like, membranes. And the Lemmings are just like, doo-doo-doo, building stuff here, gonna make up a little bridge.
Yeah, I mean, being cute like Lemmings do.
All right, my next one is one that you were probably expecting me to talk about when I said I was gonna talk about a Pokemon spooky moment, and that is Pokemon Tower in Lavender Town. This is where people bury their Pokemon and it's haunted by ghosts, and it ends up being haunted by the ghost of a Marowak that we, I believe, was killed by Team Rocket, right?
I believe that's the implication.
Yeah, and then so, you know, it's just, it's really, for a game that's overall, you know, very cute and cheerful, it's a very, like, sad and kind of disturbing sort of setting. And we did see, you know, similar things in some of the later games with, there were some other, like, burial areas and graveyards, so this definitely showed that, you know, there could be some spookiness in Pokemon. And then, you know, then you factor in the whole urban legends with the Lavender Town music. It just really adds to, like, you know, the overall spooky flair of it.
Excellent. I want to give a big shout out in my next one to the old PS1 game Medieval. Medieval is one of those games that is super, like, ostensibly horror themed, but it's, like, so comedic and so silly and cute and over the top. And, you know, it's a lot more Nightmare Before Christmas than Nightmare on Elm Street. Let's say it like that. But, you know, it is a game where you're playing, you know, an undead skeleton knight. You do fight various creepy crawlies. So it's something that, you know, every year when we do these Halloween episodes, I'm, like, kind of bummed I don't really get to bring up in any way. This was finally my way, because it's not a spooky game, but it is spooky themed. If you haven't played it, I would highly recommend it. It has that sort of late 90s 3D platforming feel that I feel like very few games have right now. People end up throwing, you know, hundreds of dollars into Kickstarters to try and get games like this made. And yet, I feel like of most of my friends, most of of them have not played it, despite the fact that it was a fairly major release at the time.
I remember seeing it in all of the like gaming magazines at the time.
Yeah, it's just a lot of fun. I wholeheartedly recommend people check it out. It did get a PSN release for PS3 a few years back, so it's pretty easy to play if you still have a PS3.
Yeah, so my next entry is going to be part of Ocarina of Time, which itself is not a super spooky game, but there's a pretty spooky part, which is the bottom of the well. So that's basically, you know, when there's the well in Kakariko Village and you have to use the Song of Storms, and then you can go into the bottom of the well. And so basically, you know, it's filled with a bunch of like Skulltulas, Wallmasters, Gibdos, Keith, if I didn't say that already, and most importantly, the Reededs. And, you know, like, the Reededs will, like, respawn, and, like, the Reededs are just, like, disgusting and creepy, and they hump you. And so, like, it's really disturbing, you know, in the scope of all of the Ocarina of Time content, but especially the Reededs.
Well, I would say that there's a way scarier phenomena in the Zelda series, and that was in Breath of the Wild, and that's specifically the Guardians. Guardians are terrifying. Even still, when I listen to, like, music on my iPod on shuffle, like, if that musical cue comes up that plays when the Guardians are attacking you, like, the hair on the back of my neck will stick up, and it actually is, like, almost like PTSD. Like, I'll start, like, getting panicked, like, oh god, I need to run. So, that's gonna be my pick for a spooky scenario, is just Guardian fights. If I have to tie it into a specific one, I would say that one area, not gonna try to be too spoilery, because I know Breath of the Wild, but there's one area, it's underneath like a giant ancient structure, and there's almost like a guardian graveyard that has a bunch of seemingly inactive guardians that do end up activating.
Mm-hmm.
That sequence was horrifying. Like, I would not call Zelda a horrific game, but that was a horrific sequence. What else do you got for me?
So my next one's going to be really light and fluffy. It's the Twisted Mansion track from Mario Kart 8. You know, there's been lots of spooky Mario Kart tracks, but I had to go with Twisted Mansion just because I love Luigi's Mansion, and this is the Luigi's Mansion themed track. And I love that, you know, like, it literally does twist, so you'll be, like, going upside down and up and around, and it's, like, it's just a really fun representation of Luigi's Mansion in the Mario Kart franchise.
Excellent. You know, I also want to shout out for this next one, Gone Home. You know, Gone Home, I think, really fantastic game, narrative experience, whatever you want to say. Gets to ride it a lot as, you know, a walking simulator. But when I played it for the first time, I didn't really know what I was getting into. All I really knew about it was that everyone in games whom I trust was like, this is a must play. You have to play it right now. And so basically, after turning like every corner in the game, I was expecting like a ghost or a ghoul to jump out at me. I was expecting some revelation of death and massacre and, oh, a twist. Oh, I've been dead all along. Obviously, this never came, but definitely speaks to the atmosphere of solitude and loneliness and repression in that game, that it was, for me, a very tense and scary experience, regardless of how that resolved. And I think it was notable because I've actually spoken to other people who went in blind and had very similar experiences.
All right, I'm going to go with...
It turned out that evil was homophobia.
Oh, no. Isn't it always? So I'm going to pick a classic for my next one. That is the Phantom Train of Final Fantasy VI. Because it is, you know, it is literally a train carrying dead to the other side. And you can, you know, talk to the ghosts. Some of them will, like, attack you, but then you can buy items from some. And some will be temporary party members, which is just really cute, I think. You know, so this basically involves Sabin, Cyan, and Shadow accidentally getting on the train in the Phantom Forest, and they just have to fight through the train in order to be able to disembark the train.
And suplex it.
Yeah, because it ends up being a sentient train. And then it's, you know, slight spoiler alert, there's a really touching moment where Cyan sees his wife and son boarding the train because Joma Castle had been destroyed. And so, you know, just very... So that part's kind of sad. But, you know, overall, I would say the ghost train is just very silly, but also very, you know, spooky flavor. And I just realized that Joma is also a place in Final Fantasy XIV.
Yeah, that's literally meant to be that the reference.
Yeah, like, Final Fantasy XIV is basically a Final Fantasy V and VI reference. But that's a side note. Phantom Train, love it. Suplex it.
So I'm going for another hallucination sequence. This one in Max Payne. Of course, many of you out there may be familiar with Max Payne, although at this point you actually might not. That was kind of a long time ago. But, you know, at the time of its release, Max Payne, holy moly. Okay, I'm not going to judge you anymore, Slaggy. I just had a freak out over how old Max Payne is now. That was 16 years ago that came out. Oh, it was a big deal, though, for being one of the first games to utilize, like, a bullet time effect in the style of The Matrix. You know, it's kind of like a hard-boiled detective noir-type game. It's actually apparently available on the PS4 as a PS2 emulated classic, which is cool. PC version is obviously still pretty easily accessible. The thing is, basically, Max Payne's life goes to complete shit, and you end up, you know, going through his internal monologue throughout the game. But the thing is, some of his nightmares and drug-related hallucinations become the stuff of horror as he is reliving some of the awful things that have happened to him. You end up with, like, all of these, like, crazy things happening, you know, blood pools on the floor, blood dripping down the walls of hallways you're going through hallways, stumbling through hallways that are just never-ending. It's just a really horrifying sequences, which, again, you know, the way I tend to play games, it often ends up being the middle of the night, dark room, way too close to the TV, total, you know, force of sound and light going on right in my face. And this was actually, I felt really overwhelming and very effective. Like, I really felt very unsettled by the hallucination sequences in this game, particularly stuff involving Max's family and what did or did not happen to them. So, yeah, just some pretty gross, spooky stuff. And I guess you can kind of tell by Slagkick and I's list what bothers me and what bothers him.
Yeah.
So, Slaggy, why don't you take this next one?
All right. This is my last one, I guess, huh?
It sure is.
Yeah, so the last one I wanted to highlight was an example of a spooky sequence in a game that, you know, definitely had some, you know, troublesome matters, but I wouldn't overall describe as a horror game, and that's Bioshock Infinite. You might remember what we did years ago, look at that with Space Pirate Ben. Controversial game, but I still really think it is a work of art. You know, I mean, yes, it has a lot of very difficult issues to look at, but what I am talking about particularly is the sequence where you go to the Comstock house, and basically you are haunted by the half-dead, half-alive Lady Comstock in the form of the siren. So basically you have to, like, chase her throughout the entire manor, and, you know, you end up basically able to, you know, calm her tortured soul. But, you know, the actual sequences with the siren are just really creepy, and just it really stands out in my memory as one of the most unique sequences in Bioshock Infinite.
Awesome. And for my last one, I'm actually going pretty far afield from the lines that I've been writing thus far. I want to take it back to the X-Men game on Genesis. You know, this was kind of a big deal back in the day, both the game in general and this specific sequence. X-Men was, at the time, sort of like the hottest comic book property. It was kind of a coup that this Sega-developed game, obviously Genesis exclusive since it was Sega developed, but, you know, it was just like this really cool, really hard game. And the thing is, there was one sequence in particular that was terrifying in a different way from the other terrors that we're talking about. After you would fight Mojo, and this was very deep in the game, this was, you know, like the level before the last, and this is a game that's hard enough where I think a lot of gamers never saw past the second level in the first place. After you'd fight Mojo, you know, your Mojo verse and everything, and so you're basically stuck inside crazy TV land. You find a TV terminal and you beat the crap out of it, and the game goes to almost like a DOS style screen that tells you to reset the computer, and the game stops responding to any input you put in on your controller. And what you have to do is actually go over to your Genesis unit and reset your Genesis. And the thing is, you can't actually reset it for too long. Like, you have to, like, very lightly just, like, tap on it. So there's, like, a power fluctuation, but not a cut of power. Because if you actually cut the power, the game will actually just turn off and reset. It just needs, like, that fluff of power, and then it will give you, like, a fake boot up sequence and load you into the last level of the game. The thing is, most people never figured out how to reset the computer because it was such a strange thing to face you with. It was this very, like, outside the box, fourth wall, you know, Psycho Mantis type game design. And it was terrifying, you know, to get to the sequence, get stuck. And then, you know, if you had, like, a certain model Genesis or your reset button didn't work right, you were fucked, basically.
Damn.
Yeah. So it was terrifying. It was actually in a completely different way from the rest of this stuff, because this game was so hard. It was terrifying to, like, am I actually going to be able to access this sequence, or is my hardware going to be a real problem for me? Like, I had one buddy, his reset button would stick anytime you'd press it. He never, like, on his own unit got past that sequence, because he could not tap it light enough. It wouldn't, like, pop back up. It would stay depressed. And so it was very upsetting for, I think, a lot of people, this sequence, whether they got stuck at it or just had the mortal terror of losing their progress in a very hard game with no save states. So that about wraps it up for our discussion. I did have an honorable mention. I just wanted to say the entire game of Legend of Zelda Majora's Mask.
Oh, yeah.
Like, yeah, Slaggy might want to talk about the bottom of the well in Ocarina of Time. I might want to talk about the first guardian you fight in Breath of the Wild. None of this got shit on Majora's Mask, which is basically a horror game.
The body horror game transformed into a Deku.
Right? You're putting on that Zora mask and screaming bloody death.
Basically Kafka-esque.
Majora's Mask, Kafka-esque. Next on Game Buoy.
Right. And so I'd like to close out with honorable mention for some spooky Sonic stages. Like, you know, Mystic Cave Zone is, like, got some really spooky music and kind of, like, creepy vines and stuff. But, you know, what I really gotta say is, you know me, the fighting freak Knuckles, and we're at Pumpkin Hill. You ready? Also, did you know that elements from Pumpkin Hill and Pyramid Cave from Sonic Adventure 2 were used in a game for Sega's Tokyo Joyopolis in 2013 in Japan called Sonic Ghost Shooting? I don't know anything else about Sonic Ghost Shooting, but that's a thing.
All right. Well, all of that having been said, boys and ghouls, it's time to start wrapping this up. So let's start the wind down by talking about what's up. So, this week I have primarily been playing Destiny 2, which I have been really loving. You know, I'm at a light level or power level now of 286. I haven't done the raid yet, but I'm at the point where I do the nightfalls and everything. I'm really enjoying it, and I think I'm starting to look in the direction of that raid. So, hopefully I'll be able to talk about that soon. Just really having a ton of fun. I've also been playing Stardew Valley on the Switch. Having that game in portable form is dangerous. I've also been revisiting some 3DS love with Pokemon Gold, which I'm really enjoying. I'm at the point I've gotten, like, 2 gym badges. I have a bunch of Pokies I really like. They all have cute names. Super enjoying that. And I also just downloaded Golf Story because everyone's talking about it. I haven't played it yet, but I will probably do that tonight. Just all in all, kind of exciting gaming week for me, though. Been really digging Destiny. Been really enjoying Stardew Valley. And I've also been playing MVCI, but I don't have as much fun with that. Slaggy, what about you?
All right, well, I have been playing a little bit of Pokemon Silver. Just beat the first gym. I haven't spent a lot of time with it. I've been pretty busy with some things with work lately, and so that's kind of cut into the amount of time that I've really, you just had the energy to put into games lately. But, so, you know, I'm really happy to be revisiting Silver. You know, it's one of my favorites of all time. I have, you know, a couple of Pokemon that I'm, you know, are about in the 12 to 15 range right now. So, you know, definitely just trying to enjoy that and kind of take my time because it's not like it's brand new and something that I'm, like, you know, trying to devour all at once. I've also been playing some Final Fantasy 14 here and there. Working a little bit on my alt character, but really feeling with the new patch coming this week that I'm wanting to really get back into working on my main character, who, appropriately enough, is a Dark Knight, is his main job. And so I'm about all things spooky with him. So definitely looking forward to that, and hopefully being able to pick up a free company house for us this week. And if you're on the Cactar server, you know, I haven't been able to really fit in a lot of Final Fantasy 14 time in the past month, but if you play on Cactar or really on any server on that data center, which I believe is the Aether data center, you know, definitely let me know on Twitter. I'm at Slagkick, even if we just do like some cross group, cross realm content, whatever. And then I've put in a little bit of time in Destiny 2. I can't remember. I don't believe I had started last time we recorded. So I started out trying to play the hunter that I had from Destiny 1 because I'd used the boost on him, and, you know, so he was eligible to be carried over. And I was really finding it hard to get to the, you know, more open world part of it. So I made a Titan instead, and she is a super cool looking Awoken. Is that what it is? The kind of zombie-ish yep. Awoken Titan. And definitely finding that's connecting with me a lot more, and really only getting started with it. You know, I had to do all of the, you know, single player content, so to speak, in order to, you know, unlock the open world hubs, I guess you would say. But definitely looking forward to putting more time in, catching up to you, Captain Spike, and our other friends who are playing. And yeah, so if you're playing on PS4, which, I mean, if you want the exclusive content, I guess that's where you got to play, unless you're waiting for PC, then let me know. With that, I think it is time to take a look at our social links.
Yay!
So just a few tweets to catch up on here. We have that retro code on the release of episode 145 saying, yes, Virgin FJ, I'm sorry if I'm saying that wrong, Virgin or Virgin FJ, saying, can't wait to listen. And also, a lot of people sending a lot of love your way, Captain Spike.
And, you know, I have to say, it truly means the world to me that so many people have been reaching out and really being supportive of me in this kind of difficult time. It really honestly means a lot. And like one of the things, and, you know, I was telling my therapist this, but like, it seems silly that randos, effectively randos on the internet, like can have such a positive impact on my life. But I ain't mad about it. Like, it's been truly beneficial to have so many positive voices and supportive voices really being there for me and encouraging me, you know, in the times that I really doubt my commitment to dealing with these issues. So it's really deeply appreciated. Thank you all so much.
Yeah, we love you out there. And to end on one last note, we have Soundscape 419 saying, hey, I was wondering if I can add you guys on my Switch. Certainly. I will retweet once this episode's up. I'll retweet or tweet out our, you know, I mean, I'm speaking on your behalf.
Yeah, you can tweet them both out.
Yeah, so I will tweet out both of our
and, you know, that doesn't just go for Soundscape 419.
Oh, obviously.
Anyone out there who wants to connect with us on any of the platforms, like, just slide into the DMs, add us, you know, here at the show. We do, again, we've had a lot going on lately, so we haven't been checking the show Twitter as often as we'd like, but definitely, yeah, we're always happy to add you guys on any platform, on any service. Just reach out.
Indeed. With that, you can reach us on various social medias. We like your Facebook likes. We effing love Twitter. You can email us at mailbooey@gamebooey.org. Whoa. Mailbooey was excited to be back. Of course, we are too. And if you would like to subscribe to us or leave us a rating or review, we're on iTunes, aka Apple Podcasts. Is that what it is now?
Yes.
It's always going to be iTunes to me. Google Play, Stitcher Radio. Please let us know if you feel we should be anywhere else, or if there are any places where we should be functional and we may not be. For example,
let us know.
One of our listeners here on GameBooey said that on Android phones that reading is fundamental maybe doesn't always work, so that's something I have to look into for that. But hopefully GameBooey is accessible.
Or just don't.
Accessible on every device or place you would want it to be. And with that, I'd like to move it into the shout-outs.
All right, I want to start our shout-outs, of course, with a shout-out to the Voice of Geeks Network over at VogNetwork.com. You can hear us streaming over there, as well as such fantastic shows as Girls Gone Wow, where you can get a female's perspective on the world's most popular MMO. Orange Haunch Radio, where every gamer has a voice and from whom we steal so many of our cues from week to week. Ranger Pridecast, where myself and Shane Alenko talk about the current season of the Power Rangers meta-series and the current season of the Super Sentai meta-series, upon which it's based out of Japan. We have been out of commission over there due to some issues in my own life and some issues in Shane's life, but I intend on reaching out to Shane tonight to get that back on track, so please look forward to new content from that soon. You can also check out the Starboard Power Coupling podcast podcast, a Star Trek podcast you hope doesn't fail.
You call it the Starboard Power Crappling Podcast?
I did not call it that, but you did. In non-VOG shows, I want to point you in the direction of the Nintendo Love Fest, which does exactly what it says on the tin, and X Nation, an awesome podcast focusing on Marvel's Mighty Mutants. You should also check out the Astral Era podcast. Astral Era is a Final Fantasy XIV podcast focused on in-depth discussion of new content, raid game mechanics, story slash lore, music, and of course, glamour, darling. You should also check out Slagkick's show Reading is Fundamental, where myself, Rob Roberts, Mornjunge Radio, Delvin from VG Realness and Slaggy talk about the current season.
Can you say
season,
myself and Slagkick and then and Slaggy? Sorry.
Talk about the current season of RuPaul's Drag Race when there is in fact a season. So please look forward to that coming back in the next few months.
Yes, Queen.
Slaggy, take us a game bar.
Speaking of Yes, Queen, I'd like to shout out to the Hunty Bunch, including Game Bar, the gay video game Prairie Home Companion. I'd also like to shout out to VG Realness, serving up a dose of gaming chit-chat among friends. The Magical Boys podcast, formerly known as the Joystick Jockeys, a pop culture podcast from a queer perspective. I'd like to also shout out to our allies over at the Nintendo Fun Club, your place for platformers, positivity, and pop punk. I'd also like to steer you in the direction of our sister ship shows, which are Anime Buoy, your port of call for anime recommendations, news bits, and discussions that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be, as well as Stabcast, the same type attack bonus podcast, your twice monthly look at the deeper worlds of Pokemon. Again, the same, you know, scheduling and, you know, life things going on that have meant a little less. Game Buoy has also affected those shows, but, you know, we're definitely working to get everything back on course. I'd like to also shout out to our wonderful theme music done by the late, great Zelda Reorchestrated, which is the project that aimed to reorchestrate beautiful Zelda music into gorgeous symphonic sounds. They unfortunately closed their doors quite a while back, but will forever be pouring out a 40 into the bottom of the well.
All right, all of y'all out there in internet radio land, it has been a lovely Sunday afternoon to spend with all of y'all. I hope you've had half as much fun listening as we've had talking. We will be back at you pretty quick with some more horrific focus episodes. But until then, keep gaming, keep thinking, and creepy crawlers!
I ain't gonna let it get to me, I'm just gonna creep. Down in Pumpkin Hill, I gots to find my lost piece.
Mics are hot.
Hot mics, hot mics. Get your hot mics.